Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 1st, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including information on a report that raises some thorny issues about how to classify ethanol in trade issues, and one on the first shipment of U.S. beef to South Korea. It has arrived to that nation, but it may be destroyed. And I'll tell you about another thorny issue, the European corn borer. That's the first insect to be controlled by a BT corn hybrid. It appears to be making a comeback. Oh, and don't forget that we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City just after the bottom of the hour. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com.
Taking a look at the numbers now from the Chicago Board of Trade as they finished on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit like this from Chicago. December contract at 333.5, up 12.75 cents today. March contract at 347, a settlement price up 12.25, and the May futures 354. They were up 12.5. Some new contract highs made in the corn pit. November beans 645, up 14.75. The March contract at 668. They were up 13.5. We'll go back and catch the January's at 658.25, and they finished 14 cents higher for the day. Soybean meal December contract 193.10, up 350. Bean meal March contract 195.30. They were up $2.80. The bean oil finished the December 27.47, up 64 for the day. Taking a look at the wheat from Chicago, December contract 487.5, up 4.5. The March contract at 508.5. They were up 5.5 for the day. And the December oats settled at 243.75, up 9.75. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle finished the December contract at 87.55. They were off 27.5 cents for the day. And the February contract off 15 at $90.67.5. December lean hogs at 64.40. They were down 55. And the Febs at 67.27.5 were down 77.5 cents for the afternoon. Joining us now for our look at the futures market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois. Bill filling in this afternoon, of course, for Paul Cooley, who is away. Good afternoon to you, Bill. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk a little bit about this marketplace. Tell me, as you took a look at the market and we made those new contract highs in the corn, were you expecting that to happen today to begin with? And then what were the reasons that we pushed on up?
Well, another fun day in the marketplace, Todd. First question, no, I can't say that I was expecting that. Dave and I discussed this morning whether the question today probably was whether yesterday was a beginning of a correction or whether it was just a profit-taking day at the end of the month, and I guess the market told us today that it was just a profit-taking day at the end of the month. As far as the corn market, I mean, I think that we're going up here, we're going to test this 334 again or tested it today again. I think that, you know, 334, 335 level on the December corn is kind of a critical area going back for a couple of years even. The wheat close, I didn't really like it real well today. It looked like about 3 minutes ago in the trade that we were going to end up closing on our highs, and we actually ended up closing about 7 or 6.5 cents off the highs. So that was kind of disappointing, I thought. And, of course, the soybeans, new highs there, as you said, and we're kind of in this 50-cent increment thing on the soybeans. We're going to try 650, and if we get through that, we'll go the next 50 cents up.
Are we in, do you think, a post-harvest leg up? Does this signal the start of that?
I don't know that I'm ready to say that. Are you saying specifically on the beans?
Beans and corn both.
Yeah, I think from a timing standpoint, beans are kind of in that seasonal pattern here where you sometimes get this post-harvest Thanksgiving move higher, and I guess I could say that we may be in that on the beans. Corn, I don't know. I'm not sure that I think this 335 area is just critical, and we have to see whether we can get through that. It looks like on the close tonight that we probably will.
And once we make that move, are we looking at, what, 345, 350?
Probably the 350 area, I would say. And then we talked about this morning the support areas. I think you have to really be realistic that the strong support comes in that $2.95, $3 area. There's not a lot in between there, although there are some support areas.
And I heard Dave ask about what producers should do with the rest of the crop that they have left and whether they should go ahead and market some of that cash. And can you repeat your advice from that this morning, too?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's nothing wrong with selling corn at these levels. That's one thing. A producer just has to keep his head about him and look at the situation. It's kind of like sometimes you see on TV at the end of a football game and somebody scores and everybody's celebrating and the crowd's going nuts, and you look at the coach and he's looking at what play he's going to run for the two-point after. I think that's kind of where the producer has to be today. You kind of have to be looking at the nearby focus is, you know, how do I make profit here, and selling grain is the way to do that. I don't want to necessarily have all my grain sold. I think that, I guess ideally I'd have somewhere in that 35 to 40% of the grain left, but you could look at having some kind of floor under that with some put options. If you have more grain sold than you'd like, I think you really have to, at this point, you have to look at to re-own some of that. You have to look at some kind of a correction before you do that. It's just hard for me to look at these levels and see how you can come out here and re-own a lot of it. And really, I guess I feel pretty much that way on the corn and the soybean side.
Bill, we have one extra guest that joins us this afternoon because we are actually not broadcasting from the studios at WILL, although it probably sounds pretty close to that. We are actually in the Farm Bureau RFD studios in Bloomington. I have some business here this afternoon, and we'll hear about that a little later. Dale Durkles is with us this afternoon, too, and maybe I'd like the two of you to have just a bit of a discussion on what producers might do with the crop that they intended to store, have stored, and are looking at it in the bend and are probably quite likely to sit back and think, well, we ought to throw away the key. And maybe, Dale, you want to go first?
Let him take off because you've been talking to him, and okay. I'll try to pick up the drift of where he's at.
So what do you think that producers who've got grain that they've either stored or they've paid for storage, one of the two, and those are two different things I know, that they ought to be doing with the corn?
Well, as I said, the grain that you have stored, I guess one thing that I would look at doing is to come out here and maybe get some kind of a put option underneath it to get some kind of a floor on it, and then just allow the market to go on up if it wants to go up, but to know that you've got your limited risk on that grain out here in the bin on the farm would be the preferred storage place for that type of a situation. If you have commercial storage, I think you do have to look at the idea of making the sales and then coming back in with some calls and re-owning. But to me right now, the calls are pretty expensive. You almost need to get a correction before you do that.
You know, I really won't disagree with what you're saying, Bill. Part of it, you have to step back and put in a perspective of the risk-carrying ability of every individual that you talk to, and also, you know, how much of the crop maybe they've already priced at this point in time, because, you know, that all factors into the equation. I guess the market, to me, when I look at it from a general standpoint, is really trying to come to grips with what may be a new set of rules that we're playing with here at this point, and they really don't understand. And the one thing I do know that when the market gets in this kind of a condition, that it's good to step back into the old adage, the trend is your friend and don't fight it, you know. And that's basically what you're kind of implying, is that have some have some protection in place, maybe, especially if you need it, but don't get too bold and sell this thing too quickly either.
Yeah, hey, I would agree.
Now, I must admit, Dale, you were on Commodity Week not too awfully long ago, and you were probably as bullish as anybody I've seen. Have you changed that, or are you still looking for a big up move in the marketplace?
Everything that continues to unfold at this particular juncture tells me that that's still the game we're playing at this point in time. I mean, here we have December corn as we closed out today, just underneath, and I mean just underneath those highs we had in 2004, and you leap over top that 2004 high, and you know, you really start to run into a situation where there's very little technically that you can point to that's a serious resistance level that could stop the rally until we start playing back towards the 96 highs. And, you know, so you just have to be careful and cautious and understand that there's something that's driving the rally at this point, and people may not fully understand it. I'm not sure I even do. I just know it's kind of like don't get in front of the freight train at this point in time.
Bill, how bold up can you get about the marketplace?
Well, I think that you have to be realistic, and you have to look out here at the supply-demand situation. Although we have plenty of corn on hand right now, if something threatens a crop next year, there's no doubt that this market is going to react to it. I mean, we've seen that actually prior to anything threatening the crop here, even just a small reduction in yield this fall. So I think you have to be realistic that this thing, who knows what's going to happen from a weather standpoint and in acres and all that, but I think you have to be realistic that that can happen.
And one final question for the both of you, if you could maybe take this up, Dale. What are the pitfalls? I always like to ask this, and when I arrived this morning, you asked if I had my claws taken off, because you guys always think I'm a bear, and I'm just cautious most of the time.
To harass you.
Yeah, I know. What are the pitfalls that might be involved here? And I guess when I look out across the globe, it seems to me that if prices get high enough, that there might be more corn planted in lots of acreage, not only here, but in other parts of the world.
Well, we're already seeing in terms of when you look out at the wheat market at this point in time with higher acreage slated or being planted for the winter crops when you get over into Europe and other places, and we're expecting it here in the U.S. at this point in time too. But, you know, you really have to, at this point, which makes it really difficult, not look so much at the supply side of the mix at this juncture as to really look at the demand side. And I think that's the area you really have to focus on. And unfortunately, from an analytical standpoint, and I know Bill will agree, that's the most difficult thing to get your arms around, because you really can't see it. And you're looking for lots of little details. And, you know, it's kind of like reading tea leaves at times, you know, trying to see what's going on. The only thing you can really note at this particular juncture about demand, especially in the corn market, is that we really don't seem to have made any dent at all. Now, wheat, we're seeing some little things happen, but that's mostly with the U.S. And when I'm looking at demand, I'm looking at demand in a broad aggregate, the world as a whole, and it just doesn't seem like anything had slowed down yet.
Bill, your view of the pitfalls?
Well, I think Dale hit the nail on the head there. I think you can look at some of the profitability levels from the livestock sector, from the ethanol sector. Those are going to be two of the keys to watch. Even though you may see the market continue to go higher when you get to some unprofitable levels, I think that can tell you, is the market doing its job, which is to slow demand? And you usually see that before you actually see the slowdown, it seems to me like.
Bill, thanks for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate you filling in for Paul Cooley today.
Thanks a lot.
Bill Mara, of course, is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joining us here on the Closing Market Report, along with Dale Durkel, sitting in as we're coming to you live from the RFD studios in Bloomington at the Illinois Farm Bureau building.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for this afternoon from our own Ed Keezer in northern Indiana and northern and west central parts of Illinois. He says partly to mostly sunny skies. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers in the south. Highs will range between 40 and 48 for the afternoon. Tonight in southeastern Indiana, cloudy. Scattered showers early, then clearing and colder. Elsewhere, clearing and cold. Lows will range this evening from about 20 in northwestern Illinois to 30 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, Ed says, in northern Indiana, a mix of clouds, some sunshine, a few scattered flurries. Elsewhere, mostly sunny and breezy. Highs tomorrow from 37 in northwestern Illinois to 53 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a joint report released by the International Food and Agricultural Trade Policy Council and the Renewable Energy and International Law Group is raising thorny questions on trade issues regarding ethanol. Among them, how to classify ethanol. Should it be agricultural, industrial, or environmental goods? Classification is important because World Trade Organization rules vary widely by product categories. The report says, and this is a direct quote, "Uncertainty over biofuels classification and the range of government measure to protect domestic biofuels production from tax incentives, high tariffs, and subsidies risk stunting growth in trade." Currently, the WTO classifies ethanol as an agricultural product, but biodiesel as an industrial product. A University of Michigan law professor says having competing fuels with different rules doesn't make a lot of sense. Robert Howell, speaking on Capitol Hill on Friday, says ethanol faces a myriad of unresolved international legal issues. Officials at Creekstone Farms say they are on pins and needles over whether their 9-ton shipment of beef to South Korea will be accepted or destroyed. South Korea is currently inspecting the shipment, the first from the U.S. in 3 years. Chuck Lambert is USDA Deputy Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs.
The process from here is that it does have to clear customs inspection in Korea. Then once it is cleared, it would be released to the importer who would then get it into commercial channels in Korea. So it likely would be a week or two before it's actually in the retail case and available to Korean consumers.
South Korea has a zero-tolerance policy on bone chips and boxed beef, as well as silver skin, a membrane separating muscle groups, cartilage, and some bone material. South Korea classifies silver skin as a specified risk material. South Korea says silver skin could subject U.S. exporters to suspension or other detrimental action. USDA Secretary Mike Johans.
The news that we have finally moved some beef back into Korea is good news. It's obviously a very small shipment. We still have work to do with Korea. In order for this to be a viable market, we need to make sure that we have solved the issues relating to tolerances and how they're going to work with us.
Officials at Creekstone Farms say silver skin is impossible to fully remove from boxed beef. The Brazilian government yesterday raised the mandatory ethanol ratio in gasoline from 20 to 23%. The new mix begins on November 20th. A 23% ethanol mix will use an additional 70 to 75 million liters of ethanol every month. A record 2007 sugarcane crop is projected in Brazil. And Archer Daniels Midland says its first quarter profits have more than doubled, boosted by better ethanol and sweetener prices. Net income was almost $403 million, up sharply from the $186 million earned for the same period last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at WILLAG.org. Well, up next, the entomologists at the University of Illinois say the first insect pest of corn to be controlled by BT hybrids
is making a comeback. The European corn borer used to be considered a major insect pest. It was the first caterpillar life science companies like Monsanto learned to control by genetically modifying the corn plant to express a toxin called Bt, or Bacillus thuringiensis. That was in the mid-1990s. The European corn borer hasn't really been heard from since then, well, at least until this fall, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray.
This year, based upon some of our fall corn borer survey estimates, it is clear that corn borers seem to make a comeback in the 2006 growing season. Many of the fields throughout the state, there are very significant differences in terms of pressure level in those fields that BT was utilized as compared to the non-BT or refuge areas. And very significant yield differences between refuge and BT acres have been commonly reported across the state.
The European corn borer is thriving in the non-BT refuge areas farmers are required to plant when using the product. It is a reminder, says the U of I entomologist, not to ignore those refuge areas. Those acres should be scouted and treated when necessary. Still, there is the question of why the European corn borer made a comeback during the 2006 season. There isn't any easy answer, says Mike Gray.
So why the comeback? You know, potentially very good mating conditions this past summer, I suppose, would contribute to higher populations. I think as we go through this particular winter, it would seem to make a lot of sense that we have larger overwintering populations of corn borers than we've had for a number of years. Remains to be seen what we'll find this spring, late May, early June, as the moths emerge from cornfields. They will seek out the early planted cornfields. Those are most likely to be ones where you'll have your most significant first-generation pressure.
The U of I suggests Illinois farmers choose BT varieties for the very first acres to be planted to corn in 2007. Gray says the comeback of the European corn borer is proof the old insect foe is a resilient pest. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, GK.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Tell me about the cash grain market there in Terre Haute, please.
Well, we surpassed our old highs on Friday because we had a heck of a run today, and it was just technical. There's a lot of people still wanting to buy this market. Farmer selling has kind of backed off a little bit. They are kind of saturated with positions right now, so they're kind of holding off. But we had a heck of a day today, and we closed near the session highs, Todd, so I think maybe we might see a higher opening in the morning.
One of the things that we've heard pretty often, and I know you've said a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, is that the trains to the southwest and the values have been awfully good. Does that continue to be the case?
I think that some farmers and elevators have sold a Jan, Feb, March slot. It backed off just a little bit, but other than that, here we are. We're back into harvest again, and values nearby on trains and out in the summer months are maintaining their levels, so we're still hanging in there, Todd.
I said southwest, and of course I meant southeast. Are you still harvesting there? You were pretty far behind the last time we talked.
We still are. We had 2.5 to 3.5 inches of rain last week. We had a couple tents yesterday. There's guys out today, but Todd, we're just about maybe to reach the halfway point in corn. We've probably got at least 25% to 30% of the beans still out there, so we're still in trouble here around the Terre Haute area.
And what are your bids for the day?
Our cash corn today is 317, cash beans are 616, and new crop wheat today is 390.
Of course, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joining us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with meteorologist Drew Lerner. Your regional newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A special census will count people on Champaign's rapidly growing north and west sides. The new count next year will focus on new neighborhoods and recently annexed areas. The city says it's gained about 5,400 new residents through the growth since the last count was taken in 2000. Enumerators will visit those areas in January. A Central Illinois woman is slated to go on trial this week in the drowning deaths of her three children, but her former boyfriend says she's innocent. Maurice LeGrone Jr. is in prison after he was convicted in the children's murders in Clinton, and he says the 2003 drownings are his fault and not Amanda Hamm's. First Lady Patricia Blagojevich refused comment this morning in Champaign on a story in a Chicago newspaper that called her employment as a real estate agent into question. The Chicago Tribune story Monday looked into business dealings with a couple who had pending action before state regulators. Governor Rob Blagojevich called the coverage sexist and Neanderthal to suggest his wife doesn't have the right to pursue her own business. Republican candidate for governor Judy Bartopinka says she wants to restrict money that immediate family members of the governor and other constitutional officers can earn. A survey of Champaign County pharmacies shows 100% compliance with a new state law requiring drugstores to post signs assuring women of their right to emergency contraception. The two-pill treatment was made mandatory on pharmacy stock shelves last year if they stocked any other kind of prescription contraception. A spokeswoman for the Champaign-based Campaign for Access to Emergency Contraception says the pills will soon be available without a prescription by just asking a pharmacist for them. An industry task force is recommending changes to some of the University of Illinois' field research facilities across the state. Included in the list of recommendations is the closure of facilities in Monmouth and Chabanim in northwest Illinois, as well as sites in Brownstown and Dixon Springs in the south. Those facilities would be consolidated into other research centers. Others would see expansion. Task Force Chair Ed McMillan says the goal is to maintain a sustainable model for research amid budget concerns. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
AM 580 News is made possible with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now on a Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Little sunshine yesterday, some today as well. Cool temperatures, though. Will we continue to see that kind of weather across the Midwest?
Well, we definitely have an impressive surge of cold that's moving southeastward from the northern plains right now. That'll last for a couple of days, maybe getting us into Friday before we start to warm things up very slowly. We probably won't see a real good bout of warm weather until we get in front of the next storm system, which will probably start to evolve as we go into the early part of next week. So I imagine Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that time frame, we'll probably see our temperatures a little bit warmer, maybe even slightly above average for a little while ahead of the next rain event. And that's probably going to be the best window of opportunity for getting some of this late season field work completed. Again, right after this warm-up, though, will be another significant period of rain. So we've got a very narrow window here where we can try to firm up the soil enough to get out there and work some of these fields before the next rain comes. But when the next rain does come, it's going to be another widespread soaker, and it's going to be followed by some cool weather again. So we may not be able to work some of these fields again for a while if we don't get it done this week.
How's the winter wheat faring in the Great Plains states?
Looks pretty good. I think most of the crop there is emerging and establishing relatively well. There's a few areas that have been planted rather late, and we do have this cooler bias that's with us right now. So some of those late planted crops are maybe not as far along as they should be at this time of the year if we're going to go into a more persistent cool weather pattern, which seems to be in the making at the moment. Moisture-wise, I think we're doing all right. We still have a lot of moisture deficit deep down in the soil in parts of Oklahoma and south-central Kansas, north-central sections of Texas. But we've been getting enough moisture here from weak little weather systems in the past couple of weeks that the topsoil has been moist enough to support germination and emergence, and I think the crop's going to do all right. We do have an improvement in rainfall potentials coming on for these drier areas as we move through the next couple of weeks, actually, and I think that by the time we get to spring, we'll be looking real good there.
As we finished harvest of corn and soybean crops here in the Midwest, they're really getting into a good start now in South America and Argentina and Brazil. How are they faring?
Pretty darn good, I'd say. The majority of Brazil has had a nice little break from the heavier rains that occurred earlier in October. The interior southern portions of Brazil actually were becoming a little bit too dry, and I imagine that we are going to see some very well-timed rain now move across that region. In fact, there might be some moderate to locally heavy rainfall. So by the time we're done with the next week to 10 days, everybody in Brazil will have had a good drink of water once again, and we'll be turning drier again in the south, at least in a short-term weather trend, and that will likely bode very well for future planting. In Argentina, we only have a little dryness in the west central parts of the country. We've talked about that in previous broadcasts. That area is relatively small in size, and it's still early enough in the season that we'll probably get a lot of this crop in the ground if we can get it one or two decent rains to come along. One of those rain events is scheduled for Saturday into Monday of next week, and we should get enough moisture out of that to buy us some time. We may not get the soil back to normal, but enough moisture will fall that we will see some aggressive increase in planting activity.
And finally, a quick word, another place in the southern hemisphere we probably ought to check on the growing regions of Australia, the wheat crop, a done deal there for 2006 in more than one way, but of course they'll have a 2007 crop and they've been suffering from a drought. Any relief coming?
There is some relief. We've already seen some shower activity increasing here in the last few days, and in fact yesterday there was already some one-inch amounts that occurred in sorghum and cotton country in southeastern parts of Queensland, Australia. That area will see some additional scattered showers here today, and then there's a fairly nice little cool front that will cut through all of eastern Australia on Thursday and Friday. You know, may see 65-70% coverage of amounts running from a half to 1.5 inches, and that should be the best rain we've seen in a while. There will be a mixed reaction to that, though. Wheat harvesting will obviously be delayed, and there might be a few out there that are concerned about the quality of that unharvested crop. But meanwhile, and probably more importantly, the sorghum and cotton crop will likely be set to go into the ground aggressively next week.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason, and that is today's Closing Market Report.